Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to this, the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm chairman of the Natural Gas Programme at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Mike Forward, Senior Research Fellow, and Jack Sharples, Research Fellow at the OIES, to discuss the key messages that came out of the Quarterly Gas Review, Issue 13, that was published by the Institute on the 13th of May, 2021. Now, in this ever-changing, volatile market, I think we need to timestamp this recording, just to confirm, we're recording it on the afternoon of Thursday, the 20th of May, London time. Mike and Jack, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Thank you very much, David. Good to be back again.
Fantastic. Well, look, Mike, before we delve into the detail of the quarterly, can you just summarise the key factors that were raised in this particular publication?
Yes, thank you, David. Yes, we do our normal sort of look at the short-term gas market, especially on the pricing side, including Gazprom's ESP. In the second section, we've actually looked at, in more detail, the relationship between gas price and level of storage in Europe, something we picked up on a few issues ago. We've got the historical correlation between the year-on-year change in TTF prices and the change in storage utilisation. And while obviously correlation does not mean causation, there are some interesting conclusions to be drawn, and Jack will sort of talk about that. And then we kind of move on to the implications of the LNG market, because one of the conclusions is that the current forward price implies storage levels return to their long-run average rather than the very high rates seen in 2019-2020. And that has implications for the LNG market. Because if European storage doesn't fill up as much, is there room for LNG? And that's some of the things we'll look at. And some of the signposts and metrics that our readers and listeners can look out for in the next few months.
Well, thanks, Mike. Yes, for that. Well, look, Jack, can I come to you first to talk about, the first part of the quarterly on European gas storage and the relationship with prices? And, why don't we talk about for a minute about Gazprom and its electronic sales platform? Because we've seen European gas prices rising substantially since the start of the Northwest European winter, with specific volatility, obviously, in December and January. So I think my question to you, Jack, is to what extent has this provided an opportunity for Gazprom to actually make sales using the ESP?
Well, thank you, David. Interestingly, seemingly, not a lot. In the way of opportunity for Gazprom. What we've actually seen on the electronic sales platform in the first quarter of 2021 is actually very, very limited sales. We've seen an absolute collapse in the ESP prompt sales since the spring of 2020, when the COVID pandemic first took hold. Gazprom managed to maintain its monthly sales by selling substantial volumes for forward delivery, whether that's by quarter, season, or even into the following calendar year. But actually what we saw at the beginning of 2021 was a further decline in absolute sales and virtually nothing for prompt sales. No reaction via the ESP to this surge in European gas demand or indeed the surge in prompt prices.
So I think the logical question to ask now is, why is that?
Well, it seems to be a capacity issue. That actually Gazprom's deliveries to Northwest Europe via the Nord Stream pipeline and via the Yamal Europe pipeline through Belarus to Poland and Germany have been operating at pretty much full capacity since about mid-August of 2020. So when this surge in European demand and when this spike in European hub prices occurred in Northwestern Europe, simply put, Gazprom didn't have any additional capacity to deliver extra volumes that it could have sold via the ESP. Now, if you look at Central Europe, where Gazprom also sells volumes via the ESP, the key question here is Ukrainian transit. Our listeners may or may not know that Gazprom's long-term transit contract with Ukraine, which is valid from 2020 to 2024, had sort of built into it, if you like, pre-booked transit volumes equivalent to 65 billion cubic meters a year in 2020, dropping to 40 BCM a year from 2021 to 2024. And so when that capacity dropped at the start of 2021, Gazprom only booked limited additional capacity via Ukraine. So even through this Ukrainian route, there wasn't really very much capacity that Gazprom was seemingly willing to book in order to make additional sales into Central Europe via the ESP. And so this is why we've seen actually, almost counterintuitively at first glance, very limited ESP sales in the first quarter of 2021.
That's an interesting explanation. And certainly I didn't know that, and I'm sure many of our listeners weren't aware of that. But look, why don't we move our discussion now to perhaps what was the main article in the quarterly concerning European storage, gas prices and the LNG market. So, you know, in general, what is it about the relationship between these elements that has caught your eye?
Well, Mike's already alluded to this, and I can add a little more detail. Generally speaking, the year-on-year change in monthly average TTF day-ahead prices and European storage utilization rates, that is, storage stocks as a share of storage capacity, have been in fairly close correlation since January 2012, which is the data that we have, but especially close since May 2016. And so we decided that this was really something worth investigating in more detail and trying to unpick some of the reasoning behind it.
Okay, but has this correlation remained during kind of the dramatic conditions which we saw in quarter one 2021?
Well, I mean, you're very, very right to refer to those conditions of the last several months as dramatic. During the period covered by the data that we have, that is, you know, over the past 9 or so years since January 2012, the year-on-year percentage change in monthly average European hub gas prices has never been so dramatic as in the past 4 months. And equally, the drawdown of storage during those months has been very, very dramatic. So this really posed a challenge to this correlative relationship that we'd established. And the correlation more or less remained, but it certainly pushed the boundaries, if you like, of what we had seen. And for this, I would say as an explanation, of course, when you're looking at the first quarter of 2021 and comparing it to the first quarter of 2020, if we cast our minds back, particularly to January, February of 2020, this is when we saw sort of a drop in Russian pipeline deliveries to Europe. It was, you know, already the inklings, if you like, of a supply long situation on the European market. But then, of course, you know, March and April, we really, you know, fell headfirst into the pandemic. This is when we started to see European hub prices coming down. And so that provides a very low base for comparison, if you like, for year-on-year changes in monthly average TTF prices. And conversely, this was, of course, a very mild winter, just as it had been in the first quarter of 2019. And so the drawdown of storage stocks was relatively limited. And so again, this influenced the basis for comparison when we talk about the year-on-year change in storage utilization rates.
Okay, but what does this kind of relationship that we've been talking about, you know, tell you about the market looking forward to this summer 2021?
As a kind of sense test, what we do is not only to look back at the historical data, but then we look forward using the TTF forward curve and to see if the storage utilization rates, which lead to sort of our estimations of storage injections or withdrawals to get to the sort of storage stock levels that would be indicated by this correlative relationship. And it allows us to really sense check whether those storage injections are realistic, or indeed even if the forward curve seems either on the low side or conversely somewhat optimistic. And as with the first 4 months of the year so far this year, if we look at the baseline for comparison for the summer, then of course TTF prices in the summer of 2020 were so low as to make the year-on-year increase in prices in the summer of 2021 extremely high. And then if we look at the storage utilization rates, Equally, the storage utilization that we saw in the summer of 2020, as European storage facilities were trying to absorb all of these extra volumes, again mean that the year-on-year comparison is going to be starting from a rather, let us say, less than usual baseline. And so if we look at the storage utilization rates suggested by the correlative relationship between prices and storage based on the TTF forward curve as it stands, which has TTF summer prices still above 20 euros a megawatt hour throughout the summer, then this translates into very low storage utilization rates, especially between May and July. So with this in mind, our analysis does raise the interesting question of storage injections this summer, especially given the relatively narrow seasonal spread seen in the forward curve. And it's our contention that while summer storage injections might be more limited than they have been in the past two summers, and in fact just bring us back to what we would consider to be a baseline of start of winter storage stocks, maybe around 85 billion cubic meters, despite this narrow seasonal spread. If we want to get back to where we were, say, at the start of winter in 2019 or 2020, with storage volumes of 95 pushing towards 100 BCM, this would in turn require lower European summer hub prices. Now, of course, this is going to be influenced by developments on the global LNG market and the general supply-demand balance on the European market as a whole.
And Jack, you've just given me a nice segue as we passed kind of to talk to the second half of the quarterly. And Mike, I'd like to come to you, if I may, as we talk about LNG demand, European imports and prices. So perhaps you can share with our listeners, you know, what has been happening with LNG imports into Europe and what levels are we looking at really for the rest of 2021?
Yes, thank you, David. I think as we've talked about in a previous podcast on the HLNG price spike, we've seen a big diversion of LNG away from Europe at the end of last year, November, December, and into the first couple of months of this year. As obvious as the cold, very cold weather hit the Asian LNG imports, those LNG imports were pulled towards those markets and European storage was drawn down. Although in March and April, LNG into Europe has bounced back to last year's levels, but given the dramatic fall in January and February, was still about 11 billion cubic metres down on last year in the first 4 months. And that's 10% of last year's total LNG imports. So it's quite a big fall. Our projections, sort of preliminary ones, suggest in total a similar volume of LNG imports into Europe for the rest of this year as last year. But bear in mind, we did see weaker LNG imports in the second half of last year as a result of COVID. However, as Jack's talked about storage, stronger LNG imports than the same as last year would likely require more rapid storage injections. And this may impact prices, which I guess we will come back to.
Okay, so you mentioned that gas demand in Europe this summer might return to 2019 levels. And you know, and with really the prolonged cold weather, this seems actually quite likely than perhaps we would have thought a few months ago. But what are the downside risks, do you think, Mike?
Yes, we were... I think some people thought we may be optimistic to suggest that demand might return to sort of last year's levels in the summer, basically, not necessarily in the winter. But the cold weather certainly and the extension of that seems to be supporting demand, with estimates suggesting it could be back to 2018 levels in the first 4 months, when we remember that's all 3 years ago, we had the beast from the east. But looking ahead, one of the risks to this sort of rosy projection on demand was thought to be the rising gas prices, with TTF above $8 for the summer. I think it had touched $9 at one stage. Our demand projection, as you said, assumes a return to 2019 levels when there was significant coal to gas switching, reflecting TTF prices being much lower than what we call the adjusted coal price, if you adjust for carbon, relative carbon prices and the efficiency of gas plants to coal. This switching continued in 2020 as the TTF price remained well below adjusted coal prices. But the forward curve, as Jack has said, a significant rise this summer. However, European ETS prices are also well above last year's levels and coal price also risen. So the adjusted prices are on a par or even slightly above TTF prices. So in effect, the European ETS price that's compensated for the much larger rise in TTF prices relative to coal. Whether this can be maintained and is really finely balanced. I think if gas becomes more expensive than coal, and consequently the share of gas in power generation isn't maintained, then lower European gas demand will increase the pressure to reduce imports and or increase storage injection, which in turn could lead to downward pressure on gas prices to re-establish the competitiveness of gas relative to coal in power generation.
Well, why don't we turn our attention for a few minutes to Asia, and specifically to LNG demand in Asia, Mike, and you know what's happening in India with respect to kind of COVID-19 is a tragedy and it's terrible. But of course, there are implications on gas demand. So perhaps you can give us an overview of what's happening, particularly with the reports that India's been turning cargoes away. What are your kind of modelling views saying on that?
Yeah, just very briefly on this then. I mean, Asian demand in the big five, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, China and India, has been quite strong in the early part of the year. It was the cold weather and the continued growth in China seems to be supporting the market. India has actually been the weakest, and this, as you said, may continue because of their issues with COVID, which obviously is very sad for everybody. In the emerging Asian markets, we've now got Myanmar started to import LNG in very small quantities. And with the cold North Asian weather out of the way, we've actually seen a surge in imports into the Asian, Pakistan and Bangladesh markets, especially in March and April. Overall, we expect the total Asian market to grow by some 5% this year, which is about 20 billion cubic metres.
Interesting. Well, look, what about other areas of the world? You know, are there prospects for increases in LNG imports there?
It's outside Europe and Asia. It's a bit patchy, really. I mean, Mexico's not been doing so great in terms of LNG as they've been taking more pipeline gas from the US. Jordan's been taking pipeline imports and their LNG imports are down. Egypt stopped importing quite a while ago. The only really rosy pictures are in Brazil and Kuwait, where we're seeing some growth. I mean, Brazil, it's not been raining, so they need more LNG. But the rest really remains subdued. So I think either a flat or a small rise is expected. I think overall, if we can just dwell on that a little bit, the growth in Asia may be partly offset by a decline in Europe. But again, that brings us back to whether there is scope for European storage to fill again with implications for prices. I think in respect of monitoring the progress in the market, then some of the things to look at, I think, are the following. Is injection to storage running above 11 BCM a month from May onwards, which could lead to Europe LNG imports averaging about 8.5 BCM a month? This would imply lower prices in Europe if they're running above those levels. Are Asian LNG imports running at or below our projected rate of about 26 BCM a month from April, rise to 30 BCM a month by September when we get the very hot weather in Japan and other countries? A higher number than that would again imply stronger prices in Europe, a lower number, that the market's looking to supply long again. And finally, all the other energy imports average about 2.5 BCM a month, which is what we're saying, or be a little bit higher. Again, higher than that, upward pressure on prices, lower than that, weak downward pressure on prices.
So certainly some clear kind of traffic lights for our listeners to be able to watch. And thank you for that, Mike. Well, why don't we turn from demand to LNG supply for a minute? Because there have been a number of reports of technical and feed gas issues at some plants. I was wondering, how is this impacting the LNG market?
Well, we were sort of anticipating in 2021 sort of a small rise in LNG export capacity with some of the US trains ramping up to full capacity, Egypt producing more with Damietta coming on, PF LNG turned Malaysia starting up towards the end of last year, and Prelude restarting as it did in the early months. But there have been quite a few hiccups along the way, I think, with feed gas issues in Trinidad. Their volumes are down dramatically. Obviously, the fire at Hammerfest in Norway closed that plant. We've seen currently some shutdowns in Peru, which don't know when they're coming back on. Supply issues at Papua New Guinea, they were down for a little bit with some of the flows being cut off. Tangguh maintenance in Indonesia, and a few other plants, let's say, not at the top of their production game. Overall, therefore, I think we may be seeing no supply growth this year compared to last, which I think that's what's tightened the market a little bit, the perception of sort of tight supply.
Okay, well, look, why don't we now talk about prices? why are we looking at $8 to $9 gas in Europe and Asia this summer, and basically double digits in Asia for the forthcoming winter? Why are we doing that? Isn't there sufficient supply?
I thought you'd bring us back to this, David. Thank you. It's a good question. I mean, when Jack and I were sort of writing our pieces, we were sort of scratching our heads a little bit as to on this one, since there was certainly a thought that before the cold winter, we could be in for another weak year. You know, not as bad as 2020, but looking somewhat more like 2019. And we had $3 gas in Europe in Q3, rather than 2018, when it was around $7 or $8. But it's a 2018 that we look at in terms of the forward curve. Obviously, the cold weather and the knock-on effects of that, plus the supply issues we've mentioned, have changed that. Plus, gas still looks very competitive versus coal with the rise in the ETS prices. Having said that, LNG imports into Europe may need to rise compared to last year, which we've already said, to absorb all the LNG that is coming on, unless there's a sharper than expected increase in demand in Asia or elsewhere. Again, that may require European storage to fill again, but at what price level? A question we did sort of think about was that whether there's some sort of fear factor or fear premium in the forward price, based on the events of last winter when many Asian buyers were caught short. There's quite a few reports of them, sort of buyers trying to restock, let's say in China. Not sure why you want to restock in a Japan regas plant, because it's you need to turn that over fairly quickly. But the sort of buyers maybe lining up cargoes to import during the summer and the winter, putting the upward pressure on prices. But we have seen, literally in the last two or three days, the forward price is coming off quite a bit, both in Europe and Asia. They're still at the $8 level, but it's a little bit lower than it was this time last week when we published the quarterly.
Yeah, interesting. Which is why, of course, we timestamp these quarterlies, because, you know, and these podcasts, I mean, because it really does, you know, change in the volatility of the market. Well, look, why don't we look kind of, as we get to the end of this podcast, you know, slightly further ahead? And perhaps I can ask you, you know, what is the outlook for the LNG market and prices in, say, 2022 and beyond?
In 2022, we're looking at a rebound LNG supply. Some of the issues of this year unwind, hopefully. Plus, we have Tangguh Train 3 probably coming on the end of this year. Sabine Pass Train 6 and Calcasieu Pass in the US, possibly right at the end of this year, or certainly beginning of 2022. Demand is also expected to pick up again, with China continuing to grow, India coming back, even Japan, Korea, Taiwan, maybe rebounding back. Plus, finally, the real drive in the emerging Asian markets could well be starting. Vietnam, probably going to come on 2022, and maybe even, heaven forbid, the Philippines, which is, we've been talking about that for the last 15 years, starting to import. But depending on the supply rebound, the market was expected to tighten next year relative to this, suggesting higher prices. But we seem to have the high prices now. In 2023-24, very quickly, demand is likely to continue to outstrip supply, tightening the market further. Until then, we see the next surge, next wave of LNG projects coming on stream in 25, 26, 27.
Now, of course, since we last spoke, Mike, you know, we've heard the potential delay of a year on Mozambique LNG, the Total-sponsored project. You know, how does that delay play into your modelling?
Well, we have pushed it back. I mean, we're now looking, I think, at, Total obviously declared force majeure, which is said about a year's delay. So that means that we're restarting up maybe the middle of next year. I think that could still leave a time frame to come on of 2027, assuming nothing really bad happens there again. So we have pushed it back a little bit. And obviously what happens with the other potential projects there, Rovuma, who knows? But we have pushed them out a little bit. As a result of COVID, we pushed back some of the other projects. But then we've got Novatek saying that Arctic LNG Train 3 will be on a year earlier now. So there's swings and roundabouts happening.
Yeah, and the market, of course, will always balance, as they say. Well, look, before we finish, I would just one thing you say in the front of the quarterly that I'd like to bring to the attention of our listeners to this podcast, because you mentioned that you will be broadening your analysis in the future quarterlies. Now, perhaps you could share with our listeners to what we can expect to see.
Well, we did look in this quarterly at the relationship between gas and coal prices, or the coal price adjusted for the carbon price and relative efficiency. So that's something we will be looking at in more detail in future as one of the trackers as to what's happening in the market into fuel competition. And the OES has just published a report on carbon prices. Again, I think we'll be trying to wrap some of the information in that into the report as well and look at the impact of decarbonisation strategies. So as usual, obviously, with our sponsors especially, we welcome interaction on these topics, and any suggestions from listeners as to what we might look at is always welcome.
Mike, thank you very much indeed. I'm really looking forward to seeing that useful addition to the quarterly review that, of course, comes out at the end of each quarter or the middle of the first month after that. Well, look, Mike and Jack, you know, thank you so much for your time. You know, I've really, as always, enjoyed our conversation that builds on the messages from the Institute's recently published quarterly GASH review. You know, I hope you have all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.